This is Gutcast. While there are multiple supports in place for those of us living with IBD, it is not always clear what is available to you, especially since IBD is not yet recognised as a long-term illness in Ireland. Joining me to shed some light on the benefits and supports available to people living with IBD are Lorraine Gallagher, Information and Training Officer with AHEAD, and Jean-Anne Mulligan, a community pharmacist and former relief pharmacist. Jean-Anne, can you talk to us about the crucial part a pharmacist plays for those with a long-term illness, but in particular those living with IBD?
I suppose that people might always be thinking that they can come in, ask a question, and they'll get the answer. We don't have that much space in our heads. That's why we have specialists and consultants for that. But what we do have and what we have been trained to do is the skills to access that information and get reliable information across to people. So we're not really just a place where you come in, you have your prescription from your doctor, and you pass it over and we give it to you. It is best practice as pharmacists, if you come across a drug that you don't know, to look into it first before you hand it out to someone. So sometimes it can take maybe, 10, 15 minutes for a medicine to come out to you. And that can be because we might not have seen that medicine before. It's an ever-changing field, the treatment of IBD. So like if I get a new prescription, I'm going to look that drug up before I hand it out, because if someone asks me a question on it, I want to be prepared. And, you can ask your pharmacist any question, even if you think that they might not have the answer or you think it's a silly question. You can always ask it, and we will always do our best to answer it. And it might not be right in front of you there that we'll have the answer, but we do have the skills to pop back in, have a look and find evidence, research-based evidence for your answer. So I think that for people with IBD, the pharmacist is not really just the place where you get your meds. Like, it is a really good information source and people should utilize it a little bit more than they do.
It's probably the one relationship that we keep on a continuous basis is with our pharmacists, those of us living with IBD. We're in there every couple of weeks.
people do feel very awkward about leaving their pharmacies as well. Like, sometimes if I get people coming in, and they're like, look, I'm moving house. I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to leave this pharmacy. It's like, look, that's fine. As long as you get your meds somewhere and like, that's okay. People are very loyal to their pharmacies, especially when it comes to long-term conditions, because naturally that pharmacist is going to know everything about your history and all of that. And they know what's going on. They sometimes liaise with the consultants and the hospitals and the GPs. And it's just a seamless service once you've been there for a while. And that's why we always recommend that people do use the same pharmacy, because your medical history is there. It's much easier to flag interactions or any issues like that. But yeah, people, they do love to come back to the same pharmacy.
Well, as this episode is all about navigating the system with IBD, what advice would you give someone who perhaps is maybe recently diagnosed with IBD and is looking for support from their local pharmacist?
If they already have a prescription for something, to go in and discuss things like supply issues, if there's ever going to be any supply issues, because I don't want to say the B word, Brexit, but like it's big at the moment in terms of pharmacy issues, shortages. The ports are blocked up with a lot of stuff. So there can be supply issues. So I would say, if you already have the prescription, to pop in, just check on the supply, check on the strength, check if it needs to be ordered in advance, and check if it does need to be ordered in advance, if that's every month, or if there's going to be issues each month, things like that, because the last thing you want to be doing is going in and finding out that your medication is unavailable. And then in terms of if you want any clinical information about it, like, you can go into your pharmacist and present them with a prescription, say, I don't know what this does. Can you tell me how it works? Can you tell me how I should be taking it? Is there anything I should know about it? That we can all answer, like, easily. If we don't have it in our heads, we'll have it on the PC and we can translate it into language that's easy for you to understand, things like that. And just going in and meeting your pharmacy team, getting to know your pharmacist, building a rapport, and then sometimes that can make it a little bit just a more seamless experience for you in the pharmacy. So yeah, if like with a new diagnosis, just I think it's to let people know that they can come in and ask us anything, really, even if they think that that's a question for my doctor. I mean, all you can do is ask it. And then if we can't answer it, we'll try and find the information, or we always signpost on if we can't find the information.
Yeah. As you mentioned earlier, the relationship with your pharmacist is crucial.
Yeah.
And one thing that often doesn't get recognized is the financial burden of living with a chronic condition like Crohn's or colitis. Unfortunately, neither is recognized in Ireland as a long-term illness yet.
Yeah.
But there are, I suppose, some schemes available to us, like the drug payment scheme. Could you maybe explain to us the different entitlements available to someone with IBD? Because it can be so daunting at the start when you might not be aware of it.
So it is fantastic having these drug schemes, and they're coming down in price even at the moment. So if we start, I suppose, with the medical card. Most people know that. That's means tested. You have to be approved for it. And it's quite an application. But if approved for that, a lot of medications are covered on it. And that's €1.50 per item. Even if you get 100 tablets, if you get two tablets, €1.50 per item, up to a maximum of 15 a month per the household. And then for anyone over the age of 70, it's €1 and a maximum of 10. So that's the general medical scheme. A lot of people are familiar with that, and most people will know if they're eligible or not. Now, sometimes we might query people if they have a medical card, but we would rarely as pharmacies say, oh, and have you applied for the medical card scheme? Most people will know about it. So really, we don't go into that because it's means tested. It's not really our business, I suppose, to know if someone has a medical card or not. So usually with our regulars, we know if they have a medical card. That just gets processed automatically. If someone doesn't and they present a prescription, we'll ask if they do. And then the conversation kind of goes from there. Your pharmacy isn't really involved in the application for that. So if people are not sure if they're eligible for one or not, it's just literally a Google for HSE medical card brings up the application, and anyone can apply, but it's the HSE who decides whether or not you get accepted. So once you are accepted for that, you get a card. You can go to any pharmacy with that card, but you have to stay in the same pharmacy for the calendar month if you want to use that limit. If you go above the limit through separate pharmacies, you just apply to the HSE and they do a reimbursement.
Well, that's great to know.
Yeah, like a lot of people don't know this.
I didn't know that. You could get a reimbursement.
Yeah, you can go online and you get the form, you download it, you fill it out and you attach your receipts. So that's the general medical scheme. Not everything is covered on it. If it's not covered on that, it'll be fully private. And then there are a few other schemes that can help. But so that's the general medical scheme. Then if we move on to the drugs payment scheme, that is for people who do not qualify for a medical card. So basically they would be above the means income. That one, anyone can be approved for if you have a PPS number. So that's a really quick application online. And that means that anyone in the household can get their medication and they won't pay more than €114 for it in a calendar month. Now, there are some exceptions. I mean, like if you're 28 years old living at home with your parents, you don't qualify as in the household. You'd be on your own drugs payment scheme. So that one, there's no standard price on each item. You're looking at paying whatever the pharmacy would charge privately. But once you've paid €114, you won't pay above that. And these are all drugs that are covered on the HSE. So it's the same drugs that would be covered on the medical card scheme. There are some exceptions. They will make a few more exceptions for the drugs payment scheme and have things covered than they would for the medical card scheme. Again, you kind of do have to use the same pharmacy if you want the limit to apply. But again, if you do go to a few different pharmacies, you can just apply for the reimbursement. If it's not covered on the drugs payment scheme, you are looking at paying privately. And it would be the same price as if the pharmacy were to charge you privately on the drugs payment scheme if it were covered. But so if it's not, let's say you've paid your €114 that month and you come in for something that the HSE does not cover, you will pay whatever that costs, even if you've already paid the €114. There's not a whole lot that's not covered. I mean, the HSE does cover pretty much most things. So, I mean, the drugs payment scheme is fantastic. If you're taking medication that costs 10,000-15,000, you're only paying €114.
Yeah, because I suppose we'd done a patient survey earlier in the year just to kind of get a sense of like what it's like to live with IBD in Ireland in a wide range of areas. And I have a couple of statistics that that apply to this because, you know, it's 114 euro a month. And I suppose when I was diagnosed, having to pay 114 euro a month regularly was a burden. Like, it was kind of like, I know obviously in the hindsight, it's a big expense. I know obviously in the grand scheme of things, it's like 10,000 euro, but still in your income, that coming up, if you have a family on top of it, if you have mortgage repayment, anything else that's going on in life.
I mean, like I spent 5 hours researching where I can get Wi-Fi for 25 quid instead of 30 a month. So, I mean, like it all does kind of add up. 114 is a big expense.
It's massive. And like I say, for the IBD community, we two statistics I kind of want to highlight is, you know, the yearly cost for people is between 0 and 2,500 euro for 80% of IBD patients, which is a huge cost. And 53% felt like their medication was a massive financial burden on their life. And like, that's a huge percentage.
Because if you think also that like the people who don't meet the medical card, you get the people on drugs payment scheme just above that border. So for someone who's earning just a few euros more than someone who gets the medical card, they have to pay 114, and some people can't afford it.
It's a huge financial burden. I suppose it adds another layer of stress for when you're perhaps diagnosed with an illness, or, you know, if you have a hospital stay. Like when I was diagnosed, I was self-employed at the time. So I was in a hospital for quite a time, and then I had to take time off work afterwards. And, you know, the stress of that, I had 2 or 3 weeks with no pay because I was self-employed. And then I had to pay for my medication, and I was living in Dublin, so rent unfortunately wasn't very cheap. And there was all of these kind of build up to it. So when we look at the wider picture of those of us living with IBD, there's just the financial stress that our illness puts on us isn't given enough, I suppose, airtime to recognize that. But it is good that we do have these supports available to us. And hopefully we will continue to build on them in the future. Thank you so much for those, Gina. And I'm going to bring in Lorraine now. And I wanted to ask if you can explain the work of AHEAD and your role dealing with people with long-term illnesses, specifically IBD, if you can.
So we work across three different areas. So the first one is really that transition into college. I'm thinking about going to college. What do I do? How do I go about it? So that's the general public is contacting AHEAD, and they're, you know, usually going to be talking to myself, right? And then we have events as well for people who are thinking about going to college. So we just had one last week in the Better Options College Fair, which was online. So, you know, we do a hell of a lot of work around that. And then what happens when you're in college? You know, where's the disability service? What if I have a problem? How do I solve it? So then people could be ringing me going, having a problem in college, what do I do? Or, you know, it could be anything. And I'd be advising people. But what I usually do is, I very, very, very rarely, I could probably count on two hands the amount of times I've contacted a college. Usually I'm telling people, or I'm having a discussion with them around what the issue is and how they can solve it themselves, that kind of self-advocacy piece. And as well, Jeanette, it goes back to what you were saying as well about building the relationships with staff in colleges, so they have an understanding of what's going on for you. So in other words, if you're not well at a certain time, that they're aware that you're not well, you maybe have to take time out. So that kind of relationship building for people in college and learning to self-advocate is really important. And then, of course, you know, you've been doing your course, you're getting towards your degree. What am I going to do when I leave college? So we have like two different projects in AHEAD as well. One's called Get AHEAD, and that's about the transition from college into the world of work. So they have like CV writing workshops, interview skills, those sorts of workshops. And they're, you know, we have stuff running all the time. And then we have the WAM program, which I am going to talk about later as well. So like, what's the point in getting a really good degree if you then are finding it difficult to disclose and get a job? So we do work across three different areas.
I suppose if you're living with Crohn's and colitis and are currently in college, or perhaps maybe about to start college or further education, what supports are available and how can you access them, Lorraine? You know, because it can be a really intimidating journey as it is without worrying about your IBD then on top of it.
I know. And you know what? It's one of those things that's really important to talk about, you know. And I think for some people, you know, a young person, if you're, you know, you were diagnosed in school or maybe just before you start college, and they're sort of like, oh, how do I talk about it? Maybe you're embarrassed, or, you know, it's one of those things. I think we don't talk about these conditions enough, right? I think that's a big piece of work that needs to do to get rid of the stigma around certain medical conditions as well, you know, and going and getting the support. There's actually loads of support in college. You know, it's a really well-trodden path. So somebody with IBD going into college, you're definitely not the first and you definitely won't be the last. If your condition is very significant, I hate that word chronic, but, you know, if you've had surgery or it's very chronic, you know, you could apply for the DARE scheme. There's lots of information about the DARE scheme actually as well on our website, right? And that means that if you did have to take time out of school, your condition really affected you in terms of accessing school, you can apply for that scheme. And if accepted, you could actually get onto your course with lower points. So it takes into consideration the impact of having a long-term medical condition or a disability of a huge range of types. You know, like, I wouldn't just be dealing with IBD. I mean, anybody ringing me up, but there could be anything going on. So that's the nature of it. So the important thing is if your condition is, is to disclose on the CAO, that's very important. And then you get a form called the SIF form, Supplementary Information Form. You fill that out, include your the medical verification of your condition. You send that all through the CAO. And then if you're accepted on, you'll be told, I think it's around May, that they let people know whether they're eligible or not. But what that also does is that tells the college that you're thinking of going there. Now, that information gets sent to all the colleges you go for, right? The supplementary information form. But you must tick on that form if you're applying for DARE, because DARE is really in the university sector. I think 99% of the universities are all part of the DARE scheme. So that's really, really, really important to do in the first instance. If you don't happen to go and do that, you can still go to the college at the beginning of the year and say, look, I have IBD, what supports can I get? And then what happens is, either way, right, you can go and have a discussion around your support needs. And what happens then is they sit down and they do what's called a needs assessment. And a needs assessment really looks at what is the impact of your condition and what supports do you need? So it is very much individual based. So it's difficult to be prescriptive because it is taken on an individual basis. But there are things like, learning support and making sure that you can get notes in advance if you're missing class, or notes after, notes as part of the whole thing, maybe recording of lectures. So, it would depend very much on the individual. But there's loads of technology out there as well. But again, it is about building that relationship with the disability service and other staff in the college, so they're aware of the times when maybe that you are unwell. You know, they're very important things. But I mean, the thing about the disability service is that they're great. You know, they have really got very much an open door policy. And as I say, you're definitely not the first person to have walked in the door and said, look, I have IBD.
Yeah. And like, would it be best to do that at the start of the academic year? Or say if your illness is in remission for quite some time and you're taking your medication, but then during exam time, you have a flare up and are significantly unwell. What do you do in those situations?
Yeah. So I would advise people to disclose at the beginning of the year. Absolutely. Because you don't know. Nobody knows. You might have been well for, as you say, ages. You're taking your medication regularly. And then one day you wake up and you go, oh, I don't feel well, or whatever's going on. Because there's funding, but the funding, it's sort of like gets used, not used up, but there is funding there. But it's very important to apply for the funding at the beginning of the year if you need equipment or whatever you need. And also, that's a very good point about exams. So if you have IBD, you hadn't disclosed to the college, you wake up on the morning of your exams at Christmas or whenever they are, and you say, I can't do my exam, or something's happened, I have IBD. And they're like, what? You didn't tell us.
In my family there, now it wasn't myself, but so a family member, they aren't living with IBD, but they went into the university after years of not saying anything about their disability, just because they just never wanted to make it a thing. And it came to the point where they couldn't sit in an exam hall. They couldn't physically sit for any period of time, really. And so they went and requested for any kind of an alternative option And the college said, well, you've been here for 2-3 years now. Why hasn't it been an issue? And it was extremely, extremely difficult to facilitate any kind of an exam or anything like that. And I think if he could go back in time, it would be day one at the college, say, look, this is my condition. At the moment, I'm managing it, but at some point I may need support, and it may be a lot of support. And so I think day one, it's just the most important thing, because when it's exam time and you're stressing about trying to manage your condition as well as college, it's too much on your plate. It's too difficult. So I think that's a great bit of advice for day one, to go in and just discuss it.
Yeah. And Lorraine, on the other side of it then, if you're somebody who's perhaps diagnosed midterm, or, you know, you've obviously never been diagnosed with IBD, because we know the age bracket for people being diagnosed with IBD, a lot of people get diagnosed perhaps in their 20s, which a lot of people who attend college or third level or further education are. What do you do in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, look, people develop conditions, you know, under legislation, you can have a temporary disability as well.
Yeah.
You can break your leg and go to the disability support service or whatever. You know, they're there. They're not there to say, they're not gatekeepers. They're not there to say, no, you're not welcome. So as you say, you're in college, you start developing a condition, then you go to the college and say, look, I've been to the doctor, I've been diagnosed with this. And then you start that process and sit down with them and get support. There's no point in thinking, oh, I'll be all right, and struggling on, because over time, you may have to repeat. You may fail a year. And if you have to repeat, you're getting into, if people, particularly if you're on the free fees scheme, which lots of people are, and then if you have to repeat because, you know, you've developed a condition, if you haven't disclosed, haven't gone to them, you're going to be really liable for fees. So if you have to repeat a year, you know, the free fees won't cover that. So it's very important to flag things as soon as you know. I mean, sometimes people can become ill for whatever reason, and then it goes away. But if it's something that becomes a long-term thing, then you need to get yourself sorted. You need to register with the service. And as I say, they are there to help.
Yeah. And just finally, just in relation to, I suppose, college and third level, but we know, like, obviously reasonable accommodation can be granted for exams. But how about, say, like the day-to-day experience, for example, if you've like a busy timetable and you're in a flare and, you know, you're worried about taking the time out, or, you know, the proximity to a toilet and all of those kind of, I suppose, day-to-day battles that people with IBD have to think about that others may not have to think about. Is there support available in that regard? So if you talk to your disability service, do they let your lecturers know? Like, what would your advice be?
So they do. So when they do the needs assessment, when you go to college at the beginning of the year, they're looking at the whole experience. So what's your course? What are the main impacts of the course going to be in relation to your own condition? So that's what I mean by when they sit down, it's very much based on the individual's needs. So they're not just going to be looking at the exams. They're going to be looking at, like, you know, going to lectures. Are you going to miss time out? Are you going to have access to the notes? So in some, now it depends on the college, but what a lot of colleges do is that you sign off on the disclosure. So you go to the disability service and you basically, when you have the needs assessment, you sign off, and it's basically on a need to know basis. Now, it may not be the condition itself. What they'll be told is, this is the support that this person needs. They may have times when they're ill and they may be missing from college. So that's what I mean by, so certain amounts of information are given, but it may not be what the actual condition is. So that's up to the individual, as in who you tell and who knows what. But obviously the disability service know.
That's great. At least you know you have that support there. Like, being an invisible illness, you constantly have to tell people about IBD. If you tell one department, then you have that one point of contact. It's nice to know that someone has that information to hand. Like, the disability service is there. They're brilliant, but very busy. Some colleges will give you what's known as a lens report. And on that lens report outlines what your supports are. I think it's really important for people to talk to lecturers so that they understand when you may be absent. It's about taking control as well and letting people know at certain times what your needs are. One of the things that was a positive from COVID was the notion of blended learning. And in 2021, the ICC conducted a survey, and 63% said blended learning or remote working had a positive impact on their work and study life, which is just brilliant. There was less stress because you're near a toilet, you're wearing comfortable clothes, and all of these things had a positive impact. Lorraine, I'd love to get your advice on engaging with your employer when you have IBD. Just to get another statistic that we have in relation to employers and employees, 58.5% say that IBD affects their working life. What is your advice on engaging with your employer when you have IBD?
You know what? The world of work is a bit of a different animal when it comes to disclosure. You know, I mean, there's a bit of a mismatch. Like, you know, we find that graduates don't want to disclose because they, you know, and that's not just about IBD. That's about disability in general, because, you know, a lot of people will see that as, oh, if I tell them, I won't get the job, or it's a negative, or, you know. So, like, thinking about, why do you need to disclose, right? So do you need time off for medical appointments? Are you going to have periods when you're unwell? Do you need access to equipment to help you do your job? So there could be a wide range of reasons, time off, medical, but whatever. So thinking about, like, why do you need to disclose? So, you know, if say, like, if you have a physical disability, here's a kind of a way to explain it as well, right? You've got a physical disability. You're a wheelchair user or you're on crutches. If you don't disclose, you go to interview and you don't disclose, the employer sees you coming in with a crutches or a wheelchair and is going to go, they'd probably be taken aback, and that would be the focus of the interview. So, you know, if you have a physical disability or you need a support within the interview, at interview stage, well, then you need to disclose at interview stage. Then when you're in work, you can disclose. Like, under the legislation, there's no set time to disclose. You just, I mean, people, life is all about developing conditions. And the older you get, the more likely you are to actually acquire a medical condition, including IBD. As you said yourself, it was people in their 20s seem to be the, you know, when it kind of first comes on. So you can disclose to your employer at any time that you have a medical condition. But really, it needs to be solution focused. So that's about you sitting down with the employer and going, you know what, I have this condition now, but this will work for me. And I know it's really a difficult thing to say to somebody, you need to sit down, you need to say to the employer. I mean, you're protected under legislation as well. You're not going to lose your job because you've suddenly developed a condition, right? So you are protected under legislation. And to be fair to employers, they don't want to be losing employees. It takes a lot of money to employ somebody and then to re-employ. So the whole thing about employment is employers want you to stay in your job. So that is about sitting down with the employer and being solution focused. This is what I need. How can we do it? Like, we run the WAM program, which is the Willing Able Mentor program. And if people are listening, we're always looking for people to join our database. So what we would do is both support the person around, see, with the disclosure piece, right? And then that then is disclosed. But it's what's called limited disclosure with the employer. So your manager knows, maybe your line manager, and maybe the HR. So, but not everybody in the office knows you have a condition. Like, is that your own business? It's your own private business. So some of the supports we would have put in place for people specifically with IBD might have been somebody wanted to sit near where the bathrooms were. So where the position of the desk was near the exit to the office. So the door in and out of their office. So say, for example, then somebody's having a bit of a bad week, right? So they want to have an earlier lunch so they can use the bathrooms after they've eaten. So they'd be kind of the things that we put in place within the work. Now, there are other things as well, but there would be an example of things that we would have done for people with IBD that are specifically on the WAM programme.
A lot of people pre-COVID may not have disclosed their IBD diagnosis. And what we found was COVID really brought people forward to talking to their employer about living with IBD, because perhaps they were at high risk of contracting or getting very sick with COVID. Do you have advice for employers when it comes to IBD?
Well, I think one of the things I think for employers is to give people space to disclose in work. I think that's a big problem overall, regardless of whether it's IBD or what, you know, disability or condition it is that people are often afraid to disclose to the employer. But we know from our employer survey that we recently did, and we've done, you know, a few surveys over the years, but we've just done one now, the results of which are available on our website, is that employers actually want to support people and they want disclosure. And one of the things I think employers can do is to start putting the information out there that it is okay to disclose in work. If you have a condition, a long-term health condition or a disability, please come and speak to and have a named person in the company. that you can go and speak to and get support from. And I think that's another positive, if we can say positive about COVID, is the fact that now it has proven that many of us who would have been before treading the roads, you know, over the years in traffic, particularly in commuter towns or far-flung parts of Dublin into the city centre, is that we don't all have to be driving into work every day. The whole kind of flexible working element, you know, and that's a big thing. And depending on, obviously, depending on the type of job, that, you know, being open to allowing people to work from home, if that's better for them as well. So there's probably a few things in there, but, you know, even just small things around having that conversation with staff around, you know, do you have support needs in work? I mean, take, for example, if you're pregnant, you know, you've got really bad morning sickness, ring the employer. Oh, that's OK. So, you know, having an open mind to the fact that, you know, there are an awful lot of conditions out there that are actually hidden. An awful lot that people don't talk about. Like, you know, you could have diabetes and people don't see diabetes necessarily as a disability.
Yeah, I think one statistic that actually stood out in our survey that we did that really made me really sad, actually, and I'd love to highlight it for if there are employers listening in, because we asked if your IBD stops you going for a promotion, and 47.5% said yes, it did.
No!
And we don't want that. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Lord.
And we don't want that, you know, like we know that we can live, you know, healthy and good lives with IBD, you know, and we don't want people to prevent themselves going for promotions when they could be very deserving of that promotion. And I think that's something as employers we need to maybe highlight and say, you know, it doesn't come into it, you know, it shouldn't come into it. So I just think it'd be important to highlight that, you know, if you're listening to this and you live with IBD, go for that promotion. Go for it.
I know it's not about IBD today, but I think that's a general thing with people with disabilities, is that a lot of people with disabilities, it's the thing about, yeah. Oh, you know, the confidence thing about going for promotion. You know, you're as entitled to be promoted as anyone else. That's what you want to do and you're more than capable of doing. Well, then go for it, of course.
Absolutely. I suppose you mentioned there about COVID, how it changed the landscape of, I suppose, working life for us all. But what if reasonable accommodation isn't possible? Like, for example, if you are somebody who drives a lorry and, you know, you're on the road all the time and, you know, like a lot of people, I think John mentioned it in Goodcast One, he wasn't a lorry driver, but he still knew all of the toilets on all of the routes. Or, you know, what can we done in that situation?
I mean, I just think that is, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's in the, I suppose, in a sense, the clue is in the wording, in a sense that what's reasonable for the employer. So go back to the lorry driver. He sort of, he knew all the bathrooms on the route, so he sort of like was able to kind of get around it. So again, I think it's around being solution focused, you know, that if your job is to be a lorry driver, well, then it's trying to come up with a solution around that. But it's not always possible. You know, sometimes what's reasonable might be time, because time is money. So what you want and what they can give you may not always be the solution, you know, be the employer solution. So that's about, you know, what I said about being solution focused. Okay, you can't give me this, but could you give me that instead? And I think, to be honest with you, I think most employers are very reasonable. Definitely within WAM, within the WAM program, we helped the employers to become more disability confident as well and look at their own policies and procedures. And I think, you know, the whole kind of diversity, that kind of buzzword that we're, you know, all throwing around at the moment is, you know, a lot of employers want to be seen to be diverse, and having some people with disabilities that are in work and that people know that they're in work makes it an actual better place to work, because people feel like that employer is more open to difference, and, you know, that mix makes it a better workplace. Because I often think that people with disabilities, whether it be IBD or whatever it is that people with disabilities are great problem solvers, because you're always having to problem solve. And by not giving somebody that promotion or that job because you think, oh, they have that condition, not bringing them in, then the employer, if you're out there listening, you're missing out on a whole talent pool.
Yeah, it's a great line to leave on, Lorraine. Thank you so much for your advice. And Jeanne, thank you as well. It has been a fascinating conversation. I really could ask and go into further detail about both topics because they're so important. And I think this episode has been a real eye-opener. So thank you so much for all your advice today. You have been listening to Gutcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, don't forget to subscribe, rate and share. The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Gutcast podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of the Irish Society for Colitis and Crohn's Disease or Janssen Sciences Ireland. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform and is not a substitute for professional diagnosis or treatment. This podcast is supported by funding from Janssen Sciences Ireland. Participants have been reimbursed for their time. As of the 1st of January 2022, the drug payment scheme threshold has been reduced from €114 to €100 per month.